Due to the themes of this podcast, listener discretion is advised. Lock your doors, close the blinds, change your passwords. This is Secrets and Spies. Secrets and Spies is a podcast that dives into the world of espionage, terrorism, geopolitics, and intrigue. This podcast is produced and hosted by Chris Carr.
On today's podcast, I'm joined by German journalist Florian Flader, and we discuss Russia's latest undersea surveillance system called Harmony and how it was constructed using Western parts. I hope you find this episode interesting. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Take care.
The opinions expressed by guests on Secrets and Spies do not necessarily represent those of the producers and sponsors of this podcast.
Florian, welcome back to the podcast. You're almost becoming our third podcaster on this show now. It's great.
Thank you for your interest.
It's great to have you back on.
Thanks for having me.
Now, there may be some listeners who are not familiar with yourself, so I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about sort of your background and the work that you do with NDR and WDR and Tagesschau.
Yes. I am an investigative journalist working for a German public broadcaster. We have several broadcasters, and I'm working for WDR, which is based in the western part of Germany with a headquarter in Cologne. But I'm actually working in Berlin, and I am working on topics of national security. And I am part of a corporation, a joint investigative corporation for several years now. And this corporation of WDR, NDR, and Süddeutsche Zeitung, we come together, we try to research and investigate bigger stories and then publish on various platforms, TV, sometimes even TV documentaries, TV coverage, also online media publications, and the newspaper, Süddeutsche Zeitung, a print newspaper. And yes, this is what I do. And I mainly focus on national security topics, also more and more defense-related stories. And yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah. So today we're going to chat about Russia's Harmony undersea surveillance system. And this reporting was part of the Russia Secrets reporting that you were running. Before we kind of get into the specifics of the Harmony system, how did this particular reporting involve sort of journalists across Europe, USA, and Japan? I was wondering if you could talk to us about how this sort of Russia Secrets project kind of came together, and then how you choose what stories kind of are worth pursuing, like this one.
Yeah, this was one of what we call our international projects. So we have been in touch with colleagues from various countries and asked them if they want to join us in this journalistic investigation. And yeah, it became one of these international projects that we were doing last year. And it all started in July of last year when a colleague of mine from the NDR broadcasting service, he received a very interesting indictment regarding a businessman, a Russian national living in Germany, in Nuremberg. And he was charged, this businessman was charged for violating export control laws. And in Germany, in contrast to the US, for example, these indictments or complaints, they are not publicly available. And my colleague received this document from a confidential source and shared it with us. And when we read this indictment, we realized this is a very interesting case that we should dig deeper into. There was no media, or almost no media coverage of that specific case, and the trial against this businessman was about to start in Frankfurt. So we decided to start an investigative project. We decided we need to attend the trial in Frankfurt, and we came up with the idea of making it an international project, reaching out to international colleagues. The main reason was this case sheds a light onto a very sensitive and secret topic, Russia's pursuit to protect its nuclear submarine fleet in the Arctic, and a secret covert company network that was set up to obtain sensitive technology in the West. And we were especially keen on finding out more about a specific secret Russian military project that was mentioned by the German authorities that had investigated this case of this the Russian businessman. And this project is named in Russian Garmonia, or Harmony in English.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you for that. So let's start with the basics. What is the Harmony system and why is it so important to Russia's nuclear submarine fleet?
We were looking into this military project and we were contacting and asking sources within NATO, German military and foreign intelligence. And we talked to some experts in this regarding this Russia's underwater activities in general. And we had done some stories about spy ships and about what is called the shadow fleet that Russia is using to sell oil all around the world. So we had been in touch before with some of these maritime experts, and what we were told was that Harmony is basically a Russian version of a Western submarine detection system, the American one called SOSUS, the Sound Surveillance System, that was built by the U.S. Navy in the 1950s and 60s to track Soviet submarines back then. And yeah. SOSUS was a network of underwater microphones called hydrophones and other tools to detect and track submarines. And Harmony is basically a modern and more complex detection and surveillance system set up by Russia in recent years in the very high north of Western Russia in the Barents Sea. And it was created to prevent enemy submarines from entering a certain region where Russia's own submarines are stationed.
Yeah, and from your reporting, so how does it work in practice? And what does this sort of undersea surveillance net look like?
So we have not seen this network or the system ourselves, so we did not go there to the Barents Sea and took a dive to look at the system, which is probably very dangerous to do because the Russians are monitoring everything that's going on there. But we talked to people that have some knowledge about this, and we even talked to intelligence sources. I talked to a source who drew on paper for me what Harmony looks like from his point of view and his knowledge. And it looks like it's a network consisting of smaller networks, like little spider webs, and they are stationed on the seabed. And some of these detection systems are even floating in the ocean. And these smaller networks cover certain areas, and they consist of several hydrophones, acoustic detection tools, passive sonars, but also other means of surveillance. So it's not only hydrophones. And this network is allegedly able to transmit live data to ground stations based on land.
Oh, wow.
Where this data is then being processed. And so this is what you would say, it's a real-time alarm system that you set up in the ocean to detect enemy submarines.
But is there a possibility that maybe fishing or some sort of private sort of shipping could interfere with it in some way?
In general, that's possible. But as far as we know, this system is placed in an area where there's not that much fishing going on and where the Russian military has designated these areas to be military sensitive areas. Even though the Russians are not telling straight out openly where this detection system is based. I mean, this is part of the whole thing, is to keep it secret so that nobody knows where your alarm system is based. But in general, of course, there is a chance with everything that you put on the ocean floor, that someone shipping vessel dragging a net along the ocean floor will damage or destroy.
Yeah, or an anchor.
Yeah, or an anchor, yeah.
Yes, popular method there. So strategically, why does this system sort of matter so much? I mean, can it really change the balance between sort of Russian and NATO submarines?
As far as we know, Harmony is considered to be a very modern and very capable system of detection and tracking of submarines. It's very important for the Russians to protect their submarines and their nuclear arsenal. It's definitely strengthening the defense of this certain area of the Barents Sea. And it's making it very hard for NATO submarines just to sneak in this region. And you have to understand that this is, it's all sounds like Cold War times and, you know, the hunt for Red October and something, but this is still reality. I mean, hunting submarines, surveilling submarines, monitoring submarines is still very, very important for the nuclear powers, at least, and several countries. And Russia has stationed their main nuclear arsenal when it comes to submarines in that area, in the Barents Sea, at the Kola Peninsula region. And the Russians consider this area to be their homeland, their territory. And they have stationed their nuclear-armed and nuclear-powered submarines of the Northern Fleet in that area. The Russians call this region or this area their bastion. This is a military... it's a defense concept. It's a defense term that was created in Cold War times. And what it means is Russia wants to freely operate its submarines in this area. They want to be able to launch nuclear missiles from that area in case of war without being disturbed or suddenly attacked by the enemy. So this is why they set up this special protection and alarm system to protect their nuclear submarine fleet.
Yeah, when we spoke about surveillance ships last year, I think you mentioned about how Russia have a policy of where they're really trying to dominate underwater, and this definitely feels like a part of that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, many parts of the Russian military, they have been neglected since the end of the Cold War, and some of the material that they have is pretty old and, you know, not really renewed, even though they have vast numbers of tanks and whatever. I mean, the Soviet arsenal was huge, but the Russian Navy, they were getting funding all the time. In the 1990s, in the early 2000s, there was a lot of money put into the Russian Navy, especially the submarines. And they tried to dominate this area, the underwater field, and they have set up their special they call it a research unit, the Googie group, which is basically surveilling and spying on Western undersea infrastructure, undersea cables, pipelines, and this is their main task. And Russia, when it comes to the underwater and undersea domain, Russia is really, really putting a lot of effort into it.
Indeed. One of the most striking findings in your reporting is how dependent Harmony was on sort of Western technology. So what kind of equipment did Russia acquire, and why couldn't it easily build these systems domestically?
That's a very good question. I mean, we looked into the criminal case in Germany of this Russian national that was on trial and was also sentenced last year. He was accused by the prosecutor to have sent certain sensitive technology to Russia or helped to send it to Russia. And we saw that the Russian state apparently used this businessman to obtain material that was not easily available in Russia. And they not only reached out to this person, they had built a vast covert network of companies and business contacts to buy Western technologies for many years. And we tracked down items that they bought in the United States, in UK, in at least 10 European countries, and also in Japan. We were able, when we found out that this businessman in Germany, he was in touch. I mean, his client, the company that bought these items from him or through him, or where he helped to buy it in other European countries. This company was a Cyprus-based company. It's called Mostrello Commercial Limited. And this company reached out to this businessman here in Germany, this Russian of Russian origin, Russian nationality, but also to other companies around Europe. And they bought material, and we were able to obtain a very, very long list of what they bought, basically their shopping list for several years.
Wow.
And in many cases, this company, Mostrello, did not reveal that the devices, these tools, would end up in Russia eventually. Instead, they claimed that they were used in Cyprus or I mean, most of them were not even sent to Cyprus. Most of them ended up being sent to Turkey, and then from Turkey to other countries, and ended up in Russia. And so, what did the Russians buy? We looked at the shopping list, and we saw dozens of goods. We saw that they had bought, for example, side scan sonar systems that can be used to scan and explore the ocean floor. They are very important to do this. To with a sonar system like that, you could also look like deep into the ocean floor. You can see what's 2 or 3 meters beneath the floor level, which is important if you want to station something or lay a cable or a pipeline or whatever on the ocean floor. They also bought what's called mini beacons. These are electronic devices that are used to maneuver very precisely underwater, for example, with a drone or a robot. They also bought what's called remotely operated vehicles, the ROVs, underwater robots. They bought fiber optic cables, hundreds of kilometers of fiber optic cables in Japan. That's why we reached out to a Japanese colleague who did this, the investigation in the Japanese part. They also bought, which was most interesting to us, various vessels. They bought specific ships that are being used for cable laying at sea. There are not that many ships around that can do that. And they bought several of these ships, two of them from Germany that were, not really like older ships that were not really in use anymore in Germany. So they bought these ships. And as soon as we saw that they bought these ships, we then sent out, we have several colleagues who are really, really good at this OSINT work. And they were able to track down these ships. And we could then, what we did was we were looking into the movements of these ships. What did they do after they reached Russia? What did the Russians use them for? And what we saw was that these ships were constantly traveling certain routes. You could see for years and years they were operating in a certain area, which is the Barents Sea, which is an area, Novaya Zemlya. It's an area where the Russian military also is doing nuclear testing, and they're testing these the super weapons that Putin is talking about. It's in the high north, and they are also going up all the way north to Alexandraland, which is really, really high up in the north of the in the Arctic region. And we could see these ships moving there. So we asked ourselves, what are they doing? I mean, you use these ships to lay cables. So why are they laying cables in these remote areas? And one of the conclusions is, we talked to sources about this, is that's basically, that's the alarm system, the fence, this invisible fence that they are creating to secure their nuclear submarine bastion with the Harmony system. That's probably what they did in this area.
Yeah, wow. And, you know, when you were looking at those sort of invoice and corporate records, were there any moments where Russian military connections should have been more obvious to suppliers? Because some of the things you mentioned, like the sonars and things, did they really have a civilian application, or are they mainly military things?
Most of the items that they bought, most of this technology could be used in a civilian way as well. They are used by construction companies, by researchers, by everyone who wants to do some undersea work, maneuvering robots is also very important for offshore companies, for companies building pipelines, undersea cables, and civilian use, of course. I mean, that's why German authorities, when they investigated this case, they said many of the goods that were bought by this covert network are considered to be dual use goods. So you can use them in a civilian way and a military way. What should have raised some suspicion, though, is the Cyprus-based company, because is there a reason why a small company like that should buy these amounts of material? What are they doing in Cyprus with that? So and if you look into the Mostrello company a bit deeper, like we did, This is a very suspicious company. It's basically, I mean, we had a colleague from Dutch media, I think it was, we cooperated with them, and he flew to Cyprus to look into this company, and what he found was basically an empty office. There's a mailbox and an empty office, and so yeah, it was just it's not really a shell company because it was a company, but it was part of a covert network to gather Western technology.
Yeah, very interesting, very interesting. So Germany plays a central role in this story, from the Frankfurt trial to delayed enforcement. What did your reporting sort of reveal about how German authorities handled early warnings?
To our knowledge, the German authorities were alerted for the first time regarding this businessman in 2021 by United States intelligence. And we were told that this case was looked into, but let's say not with such energy and vigor you might expect. It was one of many cases, I guess. And then after the Russian attack on Ukraine in February 22, the German Domestic Intelligence Service and investigators from our custom authorities, they intensified their work and looked into this case. And phones were wiretapped and listened into, and they did some financial investigation into this businessman. And pretty quickly they saw that he was in touch with Russians that were basically ordering all this stuff. It was not like a local small Cyprus company, but he was in touch with Russian people, and the investigators believe that he knew that he was dealing with the Russians in the end.
And apparently the CIA sort of reportedly warned Germany about this network, as you were saying, early as 2021. Why do you think action sort of came so late in this sort of process?
Yes, I mean, we cooperated with the Washington Post on this, and they were able to confirm that it was the CIA that tipped off German authorities about this network. Why did it come so late? Some investigations take time, and it's not that easy. Also, it's for our domestic intelligence service. It's not that easy to do financial investigations. It's just a matter of the law and authority that they have. And I mean, there was some changes were done in recent years, so that it's easier for them now to investigate money flow. But it's not that easy. And I guess this was due to the fact that it was also not an espionage case. It did not involve state secrets that were being stolen by Russia, and investigation of sanction violation or export control is being conducted by several authorities in Germany. It's a difficult area just in general, meaning not all cases. Not in all cases the law has been violated, and it's very difficult to investigate whether or not a certain item is a dual use good sometimes. That's not very easy, but it takes time. And I mean, in the end they were successful. I mean, this person was arrested, he was put on trial, he was sentenced. I talked to one of the people that were involved in this investigation, and I asked them, so did you get did the Americans call you and said thank you or well done? And they said yes, they did.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's cool. And is there anything out of this story that kind of talks to us a little bit about sort of Germany's reliance on allied intelligence, particularly the US, when it comes to kind of countering Russian procurement networks?
In some cases in recent years, I mean, there were several cases where people were put on trial in Germany, and they were investigated by German authorities without getting a tip off by the Americans. But there are many cases where American intelligence is the one that is giving like first information. And in many fields, like counterterrorism, for example, cooperation with the U.S. authorities is very, very important for German authorities, especially when it comes to CIA, FBI, the NSA. The Americans are monitoring communication networks at a scale and at a depth that most European services cannot match, just simply. And also German services, even though we have a foreign intelligence service with around 6,500 people working there. We have like around 4,000, 5,000 people working for the domestic intelligence service. So not really small authorities, but I mean, there are certain restrictions for what they can do. And yeah, I mean, the U.S. intelligence community, at least for some time, was able to gather information on Russia by various means, including, I mean, cyber operations, human sources. So it was not surprising for us to see that this case, it was again the Americans alerting German authorities.
Yeah.
And we have no idea, by the way, about the initial, about the very first information, what it really was and where it came from. We have no idea. I mean, I talked to some sources and they said it's highly likely that it was some kind of a signal intelligence hit that they got, a catch somewhere. Or that they were looking into the Cyprus-based company, because I mean they were going around in Europe and buying sensitive stuff, and some of the procurement, some of the things that they wanted to buy didn't work out, so they were not able to get them. I mean, they tried to buy some very sensitive technology from the UK, and we heard that UK authorities knew about this and they looked into the Cyprus company.
Ah, okay. So it might well have been somewhere in that area that set off an alarm bell.
Yeah.
Because all it takes, I guess, is one alarm bell to kind of unravel the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's take a break and be right back with more. This project obviously shows Russia's evading sanctions and export controls for nearly a decade. So what does it say about the effectiveness of these sort of Western sanctions against Russia before 2022?
I would say that there is a clear deficit when it comes to the enforcement of Western European sanctions, for example, still. And Russia has several options to evade sanctions. The Russian state is using its huge power and powerful intelligence services. Mm. They have developed very effective means and established covert networks around the world to obtain whatever the Russian military deems useful. We see that in Ukraine, where the Russian missiles and drones, they are full of Western technology. Still, you find Western technology components in drones and missiles. And our investigation still just shows it's not only about drones, it's also about this underwater technology coming from the West that is being used by Russia. I mean, when we looked at this shopping list, we saw that some of the numbers were quite surprising, because some of these goods, they just bought one or two. And kind of surprising to see that, because we thought, I mean, you would probably need 20, 30, 40 of these sonar systems or whatever. But we were told by some sources that the Russians maybe just bought them so that they can copy them. They can just look into this Western technology and then use, I don't know, just gather some information on it. And also, maybe some of the stuff that they bought was not in the end used to build the Harmony system, but was just to see what the West can do. I mean, because this is material that also is used by Western navies and militaries. There might be an espionage angle to it. This is just because in some cases there were just a few items, and we were surprised to see that.
Yeah. And obviously the situations have changed since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Have you seen any sort of meaningful shift in enforcement post the invasion, or are many of these sort of same vulnerabilities still there?
Of course, there is a certain shift in enforcement, and there have been new sanctions added. In recent years, and additional companies, additional people were put on sanction lists. And so you have a wider picture of who might be involved in supplying the Russian military and how they are doing it, which countries they are using, where the shell companies are. So there's a more, better idea of what's going on. Still, enforcement is a huge problem. I mean, there's a joint effort by the European Union to strengthen the enforcement of these sanctions. And in Germany, we had, as I said, we had several people on trial for violation of Russia sanctions. Also in other European countries, especially countries like Poland or the Baltic states, also in Scandinavia, they have stepped up their effort to counter illicit trade with Russia. And so there's more, but I guess we still have no clue about the whole scale of this Russian covert procurement system that they have built. And they are able to adapt very easily and very quickly, because they have shell they have created shell companies for years and years and years. They have worked in some cases with organized crime. So it's a mixture of organized crime networks, money laundering networks, just people who know how to set up companies easily and quickly, very quickly, and who can bring you goods from A to B. So this is this is what they're doing. And but I think there is a, I mean, if there is an indication that someone is supplying the Russian military and is violating sanctions, as in this case, you see, there is an investigation going on. And in the end, that's what the investigators told us. They want these people to be on trial, of course. I mean, it's not just watching, looking, and gathering information. It's no, they want to put them behind bars. They want to stop this.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. And just thinking about like the with the Russian sabotage network, the one thing it's shown us is they're very good at recruiting kind of foreign nationals to do things on their behalf.
Yes, they have a large Russian. Also, large community of Russian origin in Europe. There are many people with Russian citizenship of Russian nationality. I mean, this businessman that we reported about that was on trial in Frankfurt, he came to Germany, and he was basically he was not involved in all this. He did other stuff. He was a professional. I don't know what he did. It was not basketball, but something different. So he was a coach. He's working in that area, and then he all of a sudden started in this import export business, and then he was contacted apparently by people in Russia who needed his help, and there are lots of these people, I guess, in around Europe.
I was just chatting with one of your colleagues late last year, Manuel, about how apparently even former people connected to the Stasi are somehow being reactivated. It's just like, wow, there's some pretty interesting stuff there.
Yes, I mean, this is if you know that there are people around that still have sympathies for whatever. I mean, even if they have a their picture of Russia is a very different. It's a very different Russia now, and some loyalties to whatever. Still, sometimes it's worth for Russian intelligence to contact them, because some of these people are still willing to do something for maybe a little money, maybe for other reasons. But they are really, really good at gathering and buying around the world the technology that they need. And it's very hard for investigators to go after that. And I think it's really worth looking into this more, also for journalist colleagues. If you see the amount of exports and goods that are being sold to countries in Central Asia now, coming from the European Union, also to Turkey, but also to countries like Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, whatever. I mean, just look at the official numbers of exports going into from Germany, for example. The exports have increased a lot since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So, I mean, just ask yourself, is that because the demand of certain goods in Kazakhstan or Kyrgyzstan has risen so much in recent years? No. I mean, it's because most of these goods will end up in Russia. This is one of these ways that Russia is still being supplied with, let's say, I don't know, European manufactured cars, for example, and other goods. So there are, and it's out in the open. I mean, these are official trade numbers, and these are official and legal exports going to certain countries. So I think it's really worth looking into this more. And there are lots of stories in that area.
Yeah, indeed. Funny enough, I was watching a random YouTube video about life in Siberia, and they were talking about they were going into one of their local supermarkets, and there's a section where there's just lots of items, international items, everything from like Kit Kat bars to, you know, to sort of tea that we're used to over here and things like that. And all of it comes through via other countries and then ends up in Russia. Mm-hmm. So obviously it increases the price, but it's still available.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting kind of thing that. So looking at the kind of nuclear dimension, so Harmony is ultimately about protecting Russia's nuclear second strike capability. So how does this story sort of fit into the broader picture of nuclear deterrence today?
I guess you can say Russia is very eager to protect its nuclear arsenal in the Arctic region. This is why they built Harmony. They want to project to the West, to NATO, that they are able to protect their submarines from any enemy activity in that area. They have also, they have invented technology or ways to use technology to, basically underwater spying and intelligence gathering underwater, which is quite impressive. And we heard from sources within NATO that, yes, Harmony is a defense system, is a defense project. But if you look at what the Russians can do with this technology in an offensive way, it's quite intimidating. I mean, they are able to gather intelligence undersea, underwater, in a way that even some people, some experts that we talked to could not imagine like 5 or 10 years ago. And so there's an offensive part to all this, meaning, and then also if you look at how Harmony works, I mean, Harmony is a detection system that is based not only, but mostly on acoustics, on the acoustic signature of a submarine. And to do that, you need to collect this digital or acoustic fingerprint, so to say. You need to know how the certain submarine from the US, UK or France, you need to know what the certain sound of this submarine is. And there is also this offensive spying part to this because someone has to collect this information. This is why they established, for example, the Googie unit, the Googie group. This part of the Russian military that is tasked with spying underwater, and they are going around the world collecting these acoustic fingerprints from NATO ships and submarines. Mm. To do this, you need to sneak to the areas where Western submarines are operating. So there's an offensive part to this. And this is why in NATO, they told us that not only look at the defensive part, but also see what Russia is doing to feed the Harmony system with the data that it needs to detect a certain submarine.
Yeah, those acoustic signatures are very important. I remember back when the whole Snowden business happened in, was that 2013?
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Was it 2011? Yeah. John Schindler, who was a former NSA contractor, was talking about how he was concerned that Snowden might well have pinched some of the acoustic signatures that are on file and maybe given them to the Russians. I mean, it was a possibility. He was only speculating, so we don't know for sure. But obviously, that kind of data is very important.
Yeah, and I mean, I heard from sources telling me that, it all sounds like Cold War, but it's still the case. I mean, they're still doing it. There is kind of a unofficial trade going on also in between the NATO countries with these signatures, saying, so we got this new acoustic signature from the newest Russian submarine. Maybe we can trade that with the other thing, you know? And there's not a full transparent cooperation when it comes to underwater intelligence, even within NATO. Signatures, these acoustic signatures, they are still regarded as the crown jewels. This is very, very, very important stuff. So this is why they want to prevent Russia from gathering disinformation, for example, in the Baltic Sea, and also just in front of certain harbors and military bases, Navy bases, where the UK submarines are stationed, for example, or French. This is something that we were told we should look into, or we should see the broader picture that there is also an offensive part to all this.
Makes sense. And it would cost billions to adjust a submarine's acoustic signature, because that would require re-engineering the ship itself.
Yeah, I mean, that was really, really interesting to hear that last year from a source of mine who told me the Americans, there's not only the signal or the sound that the engine makes, you know. There are several sounds of a ship that you can collect, and I was told the Americans, they have about 30 to 40 different things that they listen into.
Oh wow!
Yeah, but the Germans, they look into 70 things. 70 different sounds of a ship.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And it's quite, I couldn't believe that, but it's, I mean, they even gather, they collect the sound, I don't know, that the toilet makes in that ship, and certain other stuff that you can really listen into. You can hear that. And it's very expensive. For the Russians, it's not that easy to adjust once your submarine has been detected somewhere. Also, I've heard that's why Syria was really important for the Russians. They used the harbor in Tartus for maintenance of their submarines.
Oh, interesting. So from a NATO perspective, how concerning is it that Russia may now be able to better detect Western submarines entering its Arctic bastions?
I mean, this is what the Russians wants the West to, or NATO to consider. I mean, consider that we have a protection system in place, up and running in this area. It's not that easy to sneak into this area anymore, and we want to operate freely with our submarines in this bastion. And I mean, it's the broader picture is that the Arctic region becomes more important. And the Russians have intensified their activities in the Arctic region. You can see that with the discussion now going on with Greenland, that this part of the world is becoming more and more important for international trade and also for military.
Yeah.
And you will see more military ships and more submarines in the Arctic. I mean, there are even reports about Chinese submarines now being active in the Arctic region. So I guess Harmony is just part of a Russian, also messaging to the West, telling them this is our region, this is our bastion, and we will protect it.
Let's take a break and be right back with more. Much of Harmony's deployments of locations, performance, and real effectiveness remains classified. So how do you report responsibly on something like this where key details can't be published?
Tough question. I mean, as a journalist, what you want to do is you want to report about what you hear, and you want to publish, and you want to get your knowledge out there, so to inform people. This is, I guess, what most of us are driven by. But when it comes to this defense and security related stories that we are doing, we consider all the time if anything that is revealed could just endanger national security, or in that case NATO, or even endanger our sources, of course, because most of the people that talk to us about Harmony from military, from intelligence, they are not allowed to do this. We have to keep our sources confidential, and we have to protect them. And this is really, really important. But also the fact that we hear from time to time things that that are shouldn't be out in the public, that are really highly classified, regarded as secret or even top secret. Yeah, it's quite difficult. I mean, I can just tell you what I do. I will get back to the sources and just ask them plainly, and I ask them again and again. So, can we publish this? What does it mean if we publish the one thing and leave out the other? Or can we describe it in a way? Or is there a way to report about this without revealing too much and endangering too much? So it's a yeah, it's a tricky thing, but I guess we worked out a way to, on the one hand, protect our sources. On the other hand, we do not endanger anything that NATO does, for example. I mean, we didn't report on any countermeasures against or any ideas how to counter Harmony. And we didn't report on certain ideas or certain things that might be built in NATO countries that are similar to Harmony to protect NATO submarines.
Mm, yeah. Were there any moments in this investigation where you realized that the public picture of Russian military capability was either incomplete or misleading in some ways, yeah, where people have a false expectation about how effective Russian military is?
When it comes to the audience and the people that read and watch our coverage, I guess most people have no idea about the importance of submarines. And as I said, most people would regard this as a thing of the past and some Cold War stories that we are telling. So this is, I mean, we heard that from people who contacted us and said, I had no idea that this, the whole thing is still important. That this whole hunting a submarine and playing this cat and mouse game underwater is still a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think some people have a picture of the Russian military and what they are capable of when they're looking at Ukraine. And in a way, it's true. I mean, the Russian military was not able to conquer Ukraine yet. I mean, they have a very slow pace, and it's they're losing a lot of people and a lot of material, and it's very costly, and it's just a meat grinder in Ukraine. And it's not like the Russians are close to, you know, occupying the whole country or whatever. But that is a wrong perspective, I think, when you look at the Russian Navy and what is going on in the far north. I mean, yes, the Black Sea Fleet, they have been hit very hard by Ukraine and lots of losses. But in other parts of Russia, there is a very modern, or let's say, a more modern and more capable army being built, military being built. And I guess that's true for what's going on at the Kola Peninsula in Murmansk and all these places. So I would advise not to have a wrong impression about what the Russian Navy or military in general is capable of, especially when it comes to underwater and submarines.
Yes, yes, indeed. I mean, it seems to be the one area they really have been mastering in the last 20 years. Interesting to keep an eye on the submarine picture, I think, and not dismiss it. So are Western governments now kind of closing these loopholes that made Harmony possible, or do you suspect similar procurement networks are still operating undetected today?
I mean, Western governments, European governments, they are trying to close these loopholes. And as I said, there are investigations going on in various European countries. Several people have been sent to prison for sanction violation and also espionage cases. But I would imagine, I'm pretty sure that there are similar networks still operating in Europe and other places. There are certain countries where there's still a lot of trade that ends up in Russia, or goods that are being imported and then sent further on to Russia. For example, Turkey. There's a lot of trade going on with Turkey, and also Central Asian countries, as I said. So there are still loopholes. But I guess cases like the one that we covered, the Frankfurt trial, also because of a trial like that one in Frankfurt, certain companies that build the technology, that are selling the technology, they are more sensitive now. They are more they're more aware of what is going on, and we know that they have been contacted by the authorities to be on the lookout for certain clients and to maybe also alert them if they have someone coming up with a request for certain technology. And it's a company in, I don't know, a small island nation somewhere, maybe Cyprus also or Turkey. So there has been the awareness is there, and but there, I'm 100% sure there are still similar networks operating now.
Yeah, fantastic. Is there anything else you'd like to add that's important to you about the Harmony reporting that we haven't discussed?
I guess the Arctic region is a place worth looking into, focusing on, not only because of the current situation with Greenland, but also because Russia is building up its capabilities there in general. And this region, I mean, because of climate change, will be a very important theater in the coming years and decades.
Yes.
When it comes to trade, when it comes to the military, and it's sometimes worth. I mean, I said that in an interview when we published our coverage. We have a very European look at the world and centralized European focused view on a map. But just take the Earth as a globe and then turn it around and look from the upper side, and then you see the Arctic region. You see how close the nations are together. I mean, these distances are not that, you know. It's this is why it's very important. This is why also the US has for several years said this is something that relates to our national security. Because a Russian intercontinental missile will probably be launched there and then will cross over maybe Greenland and other places to the United States. So this is potentially a region of a lot of escalation potential, to say.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
This is something that's far beyond Harmony and what they are doing in the Murmansk region and the Barents Sea.
And based on obviously your reporting, where should journalists, investigators be looking next when it comes to sort of Russian military and intelligence activity?
Oh, I guess one of the areas that we should look into, and we do, I mean, we in our corporation do, is space, satellites. I mean, Emmanuel Macron recently said that right now, even today, military conflict is being fought in space. There is some kind of conflict going on in space. But he said the next war, bigger war, will start in space.
And interesting.
I think some people would disagree, but there is a huge importance for the domain of space. And interesting to see what China is doing there. Interesting to see what private actors and companies are doing in space. And the question of how can you protect satellites from surveillance, interaction, wiretapping, whatever. What is space intelligence? What does it mean to spy on another satellite? How about weapons in space? Can you use a weapon in space? Maybe are there already weapons that are stationed in space? So space is a place where also the Russian military and Russia in general has been very active.
And you got the American space shuttle, the special one. I can't remember its model number right now. It's XB something or other that does these secret missions. And there's all sorts of speculation about what it can and can't do. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is that's a fascinating area. It's at least as fascinating as the bottom of the sea.
yes, indeed. Yeah. The two extremes. And is there anything exciting you're working on at the moment that you'd like to plug while we are here?
I'm working on a new coverage this week on our Foreign Intelligence Service, BND, because the BND is getting a new law. And our new government, or the government, the government of Friedrich Merz, they are planning to, basically strengthen the BND and to provide the BND with a new law that turns it into, let's say, a proper spy agency.
Yeah.
And there will be some discussion within our government about what the chancellery is planning with the BND. But it's worth looking into this. We see that it's not only about information gathering anymore, but in future times, BND personnel will be able to do some kind of covert operations, even sabotage, and they will have a role in the defense of our country and the defense of NATO. So it's interesting future coming up for our Foreign Intelligence Service, and this is what I'm working on right now.
And what's the kind of public reaction to the BND and these new sort of laws that are coming in?
To be honest, most people have the opinion that it's probably a good thing to give the BND these to allow the BND to do certain stuff. Most people would think that the BND is already allowed to do all this, which is not true.
Yeah.
They just imagine, oh yeah, it's kind of a James Bond like agency, and it's not. It's not at all. And when it comes to this signal intelligence and mass data analysis and stuff, interesting to see that this new law is basically, I mean, Snowden is forgotten. So what they want to allow the BND to do is basically what many people would have considered a huge scandal back then in 2013.
Interesting.
And it's all because there's this Mr. Trump. And German government strongly believes that we need a very strong and sovereign, independent intelligence service that can act without the help of the Americans. So, yeah, this is the main reason why they want to do it. But it's, yeah, interesting.
Well, we should chat more about that in the future.
Yeah.
Really interesting, because MI6 and the new head of MI6, in her inaugural speech, kind of mentioned how there's an ambition for more kind of covert action and things like that. So it definitely feels like there's a change in temperature in the Western intelligence services of Europe at the moment.
Yes, and the European services, they are coming closer together in a way.
Yeah.
And I mean, we have a member of our intelligence committee, so to say, in German parliament. He's from the opposition party, he's from the Green Party. And he calls for the foundation or the implementation of the Euro Eyes instead of the Five Eyes. And the American government makes European governments talk more about European security, about European alliances, and new forms of data sharing. And this is why this new BND law is probably it's probably going to allow the BND to do a little bit more of what the Americans have done for us for years and years.
Fantastic. So finally, Florian, where can listeners find out more about you and your work and this reporting?
Yeah, I would say just look at the social media networks and social media accounts where I'm active, on X or on Blue Sky. And there you can find all the stuff that I publish.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
Listening. This is Secrets and Spies.